Welcome to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Weintraub. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right. So let's start off the show by thanking our sponsor, EV Items, great manufacturer of accessories for electric vehicles. And we got a message from them further down with nice perks for you guys, so stay tuned for that. But let's start off with our week of news in the EV world, and starting, as usual, with Tesla. We had a scoop last night, a quick email that Elon sent out to the team that gave us some interesting detail about the end of the year, well, end of the quarter, which happens to be the end of the year in this case. Usual push from Tesla to try to crank things up at the end of the quarter. He said that they had two critical priorities for the end of the year this year. First one, the first priority is making sure all cars are delivered to their customer before end of the year. So that's not special in any way. I mean, Tesla always try to get the inventory down at the end of the year. In the last few quarters, they were able to do it based on demand alone, but they had some issues with logistics, getting the cars at the right place where the demand was. I'm thinking places like the Netherlands and the UK last quarter could have taken a higher, much higher volume than they did. And they're going to try to do that this quarter. We've just heard numbers coming from the Netherlands, which crazy last month, like 4,000 units, and they're probably going to beat that month. And the UK is also looking strong. So, and the big difference too, this quarter in the US is going to be the end of the federal tax credit for Tesla altogether. I mean, now it's going to be completely over. So I'm not sure how big of an impact it's going to have versus the previous quarter, because they were bigger drops in total value amount of the federal tax credit than this one, which is just $1,875. But since it's going away completely, maybe it's going to have a big impact too. What do you think, Seth?
Yeah, it might be more of a psychological impact.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously there's still some state incentives in the U.S., but the federal tax credit going away and Tesla still doing pretty well is kind of an anomaly in the EV space. Usually, as the federal tax credits disappear, so do EV sales. So it's actually pretty impressive that Tesla continues to ramp up, particularly in the U.S.
Yeah, I agree. Though Tesla has been trying to adjust its own price in the U.S. with the decreasing federal tax credit, but it kind of stopped that after the first drop, which was, of course, the biggest drop. That was a year ago at this point, almost a year ago, right?
Right.
Yeah. So now this is going away. Tesla is trying to deliver all cars, which might mean, you know, even though Elon was careful not to throw out any actual numbers in that email, might mean a beat of the last quarter record, which was 95,000, and maybe even the medical 100,000 units in a quarter, which would be a huge milestone for Tesla. So it would be an official 400,000 units a year delivery rate, making it like somewhat of a kind of a major automaker, really.
Right. And theoretically, also justify that soaring stock price.
Yeah, that too. Though there's a bunch of other aspects that go into that, and we can talk about that. Like we just posted an article about the Morgan Stanley notes that went out today, which kind of give Tesla's biggest bull case, but at the same time get a bunch of things wrong. So we can get into that. But still on Elon's email real quick, the second priority, which is a bit different this one, but he says just as important, is that we immediately increase the rate of solar deployment by a significant degree. All right. So that's important for a bunch of reasons. First of all, just like in the US, Tesla is losing the federal tax credit for electric cars, the federal tax credit for solar is going down. It's not that big of a decrease, though. I think it's, 30 to 26%?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not that big of a deal, but it's still something. But also Tesla has been talking about revamping the entire solar business and significantly increasing deployment for a while now, and it hasn't really happened. Last quarter was actually a growth quarter over quarter, but it was still a big drop a year over, since the SolarCity days, really. 43 megawatts. I mean, I remember when SolarCity was installing like close to what, 200 megawatt a quarter or something?
Yeah, hundreds of megawatts.
Yeah. Like, so 43, that's nothing. But so what
I think... They're going in the right direction, though.
Yeah, they are. And if you read that email correctly, it said immediately increase the rate of solar deployment. So by a significant degree. So the rate is not like, it won't make a big impact in within 3 weeks of the end of the quarter. Like you can increase the rate a lot, but the actual deployment number won't be that high. However, what Tesla can say at that point is if they do increase it by, let's say, like 40-50% of their deployment rate, then they can come up with a decent number. Let's say like, okay, now we are installing solar at the rate of 100 megawatt per quarter at the end of the quarter. Right. And that's looking good going forward, because then we can plot the 2020 year with a much higher rate for Tesla's solar business, especially with Solar Roof coming up, Solar Roof V3. That would be nice to have some number here. Because if you remember, Seth, do you remember what he said about the deployment of Solar Roof, the production of Solar Roof per week by the end of this year?
I don't.
1,000 per week, he said.
1,000
roof? 1,000 roof per week. He said roof. Right. Which makes no sense to me, because 1,000 roof, and so what's the average over, like, probably...
Let's say five on the low side, 5 kilowatts.
Five is on very low side, so that's 5 megawatt per week of installation just from solar roof on the low side?
Yeah, that's pretty low.
That's high.
I mean, if you said if they were 10 kilowatt roofs...
I think it's closer to 10, because we're talking about a full roof here. So, right. Like, I mean, they don't just install solar cell. There's some non-solar tiles too.
Right, right.
But normally, I feel like it's... And also, it makes more sense on bigger homes too, I feel like in terms of value. Your home needs, like, you don't install a solar roof on a $200,000 house. Like, it doesn't make much sense financially. Like, the value of your roof becomes so much... too big of a percentage of the value of the entire house, because even though it's starting to get cheaper, especially when you account for the energy production, it's still taking into account the value of a tile roof, which is normally much more expensive than, let's say, an asphalt roof or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider. There's also the power walls, which Tesla sells probably an average of at least one or two per solar installation, and as well they should. It adding a power wall to your installation means that you can basically run off grid. Mm-hmm. If your power goes out for some reason for a day, you know, your solar panels can power your power wall. I've recently upgraded, so I had solar for last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have power walls, and recently got power walls installed. And now, like, you know, as long as we're not idiots, when the power goes out, we can kind of stay powered up forever. You know, we can't use the dryer, probably shouldn't use the oven for cooking. You know, we have an electric oven.
Mm-hmm.
That those kind of things, any 240 stuff probably stay off. But and obviously charging the cars. But as long as we stick to that, you know, kind of, you know, be smart about our power usage, mm-hmm. we can live off grid. So yeah. that's a big difference than a typical solar city mm-hmm. install, where, you know, the grid goes out, you go out,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of just like, you know, you're saving a few bucks on power over the, you know, 20 years of the amortization of the power wall, yeah. or of the roof. So it's a big product, like it's a big differentiator. The other companies that are doing solar plus batteries don't have quite as integrated a solution.
No.
So it's a good play for Tesla at this point.
Yes, it is. And I feel like Tesla is almost like pushing, like, for every solar installation to have a power wall at this point, at least one power wall. So it's really like boosting the whole business, aside from also just selling the power wall on its own at times.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually, I think, is a good segue to the Morgan Stanley note that came out today, which is, I assume, partly responsible for the prices. Bonnie Pernick here in the comments asked any reason for Tesla stock being up today. I think that's part of it. The other part is, of course, Tesla also being added to the list of officially recommended vehicle. The made in China Model 3 being officially added to the list of a vehicle that can receive subsidies in China. So that was, I think, a big plus. And of course, it's also an indication that Tesla might be closer to getting its official sale approval for the Gigafactory 3 in China and delivering those Model 3, which they... as we reported earlier this year, they're starting to pile up. And like Gigafactory, now we've seen hundreds of Tesla Model 3 come out of Gigafactory 3 and just waiting on the lot. So as soon as they do get that sale approvals, it's going to have somewhat of an impact on the quarter. But at this point, I'm a little bit disappointed on that. Like I think it's not going to be a major impact in Q4. If they can get like 1,000 to 2,000 deliveries, that'd be like optimistic at this point. But more than suddenly, also, by what they did, which they're being weird with their prediction on Tesla. They have this bear case, base case, and bull case, which are $10 per share, $250 per share, and $500 per share. So what they did with this new node, they upgraded the bull case to $500 per share. So that's officially a positive note, but Adam Jonas, the analyst at Morgan Stanley, is still making it clear that he's not bullish on Tesla stock, because you have to go by the base case. I really like it. He's trying to edge with like this bear case and bull case, but really you have to go with this base case. Otherwise, like the rest has no meaning whatsoever. Like he's saying that, oh, it could go anywhere between $10 and $500. It's like, that's a bold prediction here, Jonah.
And what's crazy is he's actually not really making a real bull case. Like a real bull case is that Tesla goes over 500,
way over maybe, right? Yeah, because if you actually look at why he updated his bull case here at 500, he's now taking into account Cybertruck, which okay, that makes sense, but he's taking into account 100,000 trucks by the end of 2024 at an average price of $50,000. So right there makes no sense to me. All right. Right there makes no sense to me. Tesla achieved 100,000 deliveries of the Model 3 about a year into Model 3, the start of Model 3 production. I think they started July 2017, and the 100,000 delivery was like October 2018, something like that. So a little bit over a year. And the rate of production achieved 100,000 way before that. Well, maybe not way before that, but a few months before that. So like let's say within a year of Model 3 production. Why would it be different with Cybertruck? I don't know. Let's say this is different. Is it 3 years difference? Is it 2 to 3 years difference? I don't think so. No idea where he's saying that. Also, 50,000 average price per truck makes no sense at all. Tesla already sort of disclosed the average price of the truck based on the mix of the reservation that they released. 42% for dual motor, 41% for Tri-motor, and 17% for the base version at $40,000. And all those prices are before any option. So before any option, the average pre-order price of the truck right now is just over $56,000. So I have no idea how he arrived to $50,000. And again, before option. So with the option, I would assume that would be over $60,000.
And also we learned today that there's the expensive one, the dual motor, is going to be selling first. So a lot of people who are kind of on the fence are going to be like, man, I'll take the dual motor.
Yeah, that's another of our articles that we posted today that we wanted to discuss. Tesla sort of switched the idea of delivering the cheapest version, the single motor rear-wheel drive version first, to make it last, making it late 2022 instead of late 2021, and bringing the tri-motor at the same time as the dual motor in late 2021. So yeah, that means higher average sale price earlier. That's what it means. So I don't understand Jonah at all here. Personally, I would see 200,000 deliveries in 2024, like, or at least a rate of over 20,000 deliveries in 2024, maybe closer to 300 at that point. I mean, we're talking about 2 full years into the production of the car at this point of the truck.
Maybe he's concerned about demand. How many reservations does Tesla have?
250 at this point, but doesn't mean much. I mean, I think once the truck is on the road, that's where the demand will just we'll go crazy. And then let's be ultra conservative here and say average price of $55,000 instead of $50,000. That makes no sense. Just that alone, it's a $6 billion revenue that year difference in his bull case and my just conservatively conservatively approach bull case. Like I could see an even greater bull case than that, but it's like Tesla executing okay. Like they've been doing recently with, because people say Tesla is always late and whatnot. Yes and no. I mean, they are often late, especially with like the autopilot stuff and things like that. But on the project, on the production side of things, they've been doing pretty good with the Model 3, been going pretty good with Model S. Model X, of course, was another thing. But Model X, I kind of give them a pass on that because they didn't need the Model X. They thought they were going to need the Model X, and then the Model S demand was so high that they sort of put it on the back burner, the production of Model X, and never actually... It was also like a difficult product to produce, but that's another thing. And it looks like now Model Y, it looks like they are at least ahead of the previously announced schedule, so that's good too. So I think Cybertruck will do well on that front. But where I think Morgan Stanley and Jonah in particular here dropped the ball is with the energy side of Tesla that we just discussed with the email that Elon sent out. I mean, he says literally that his problem right now with Tesla long-term, why he's not bullish on Tesla long-term, is that he thinks that the market perception will change into looking at Tesla more like a traditional auto OEM, like an automaker, and then being priced with the same multiple as an automaker and be more focused on like the short-term profit and whatnot, which is fair to a degree, but I think you missed the point completely because Tesla won't be seen as an automaker more than it is right now. Even though right now is not seen that much as an automaker, it's seen more like as a tech company or whatever, but with the increasingly bigger energy side of the business, I think that will I mean, I don't know as big as auto, but at least half as big within the next 10 years, in my opinion, maybe bigger. I don't know about you.
Musk has said, and you know, he's pretty knowledgeable of the situation. Really? He said on multiple occasions that the energy side could be as big as the auto side. You know, I don't know if that's looking out 10 years or 5 years or being optimistic or pessimistic even. But you know, everybody needs energy. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a thing. And if we're going to pull ourselves off of fossil fuels, we're going to need clean energy, and that there's a lot of it to be converted. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's certainly a market opportunity there.
Yeah, I would agree. So, and that business will also just help Tesla's auto business and vice versa. The two businesses will just, it's so interconnected. They complement each other so well. Because the solar charge the cars, and then maybe eventually the cars will serve as backup to the solar and whatnot. So there's so much potential for synergy here. It's insane. So I think he dropped the ball here. And of course, we're both, you and I, long Tesla right now. So take that into account as we are obviously biased. But I think we're also more knowledgeable than Jonas on that front. So there's take it and leave it.
Yeah, what happened to him? He used to be super it seemed like he was super in tune, and then all of a sudden it was kind of like he was on the outside looking in.
Yeah, well, at the same time he has a hold on the stock, so he doesn't tell people to sell it, doesn't tell people to buy it. He just had a hold on it for almost 2 years now, I think. So yeah, for the last 2 years, it's been weirder. I remember, you're right, like 3 or 4 years ago, he was... I mean, I remember the New York Times calling him the Tesla cheerleaders and whatnot. So definitely none of that anymore, for sure. All right. So we talked about the production timeline of the Cybertruck. About the price. What? Our friend Ben Sullins from Teslanomics on YouTube published an interesting video. Like, I mean, that's his thing. He crushed the numbers and whatnot. He looked at the total cost of ownership over 5 years of the Tesla Cybertruck dual motor compared to comparable Ford F-150. In this case, it was the Ford F-150 Lariat. Excuse me. And that's because Edmunds ranks it as having the best value for the F-150. I mean, there's literally like dozens of different variants of that truck. And of course, he configured it also with all-wheel drive to compare with the dual motor of the Cybertruck. And he also configured it with a Super Crew to have a six-seater option, just like the Cybertruck. And the price came at $51,775 for the F-150, $49,900. That's the base price for the Cybertruck. Now, of course, it's not a perfect comparison. They have different features each. And I mean, that's the Ford F-150 Lariat without any other option other than the Super Crew and the dual drive. And same thing for Cybertruck. So take that into account. Then he looked at the cost of ownership. And of course, that will also varies, and we have to give it to Ben here. He tried to be as fair as possible and did too much credit for Tesla, even though he went like way cheaper on the maintenance. But technically, there's not much maintenance to be done on Tesla's trucks or Tesla's vehicles, really, because they don't have a truck yet. The big difference, of course, is with the fuel. Fuel is a massive difference, and he looked at it based on fuel in California, that means the gas price versus the electricity price in California, and he took the average of each. So that also, like, you need to keep in mind, like, especially well gas prices always vary all the time, and electricity prices, I think that's where he went really conservative, because even though in California he took the average, most people will have variable rates and try to charge at night where the electricity is much cheaper. And that will reduce your pricing here. And of course, if you have solar, but then it's probably even cheaper. What's the average of? I think it's like 16. Is it 16 cents on the average of solar
per kilowatt hour? I don't know what it is, but also noticed that the price of gasoline in Texas was $3,500 versus $10,000 in California. So almost three times as much.
No. It was $16,900 for the in California and $9,900 for the in Texas.
So that was the gas. Yeah. So the electricity in California is three times as much.
Yeah, the electricity is three times as much, but the gas is also three times as much. So the difference is not that big. What it adds to really is full cost of ownership over 5 years for the F-150 in California, $72,400 versus $53,300 for the Cybertruck, a $19,000 difference. $65,400 in Texas for the F-150, $46,600 for the Cybertruck, so pretty cheap here for the Cybertruck, and an $18,000 difference, really, over 5 years. Basically 19 each, just with a different value each side because of the different cost of fuel. So,
big difference.
Big difference indeed. And that's with an average of 15,000 miles a year. So, also take that into account. Insurance prices also, they use the same thing, but all those things will change. So, it's not a perfect comparison. He's clear about that. It's more of a comparison focus on the advantages of a Cybertruck in maintenance cost and fuel cost. That's the fairest way to represent this. Just a lot cheaper. And if you are a contractor or things like that, and you put even more mileage on it, and maybe you also use like a generator on site to power, like to charge your tools or things like that, to power tools, then this all add up. This all helps. Maybe you can take into account maybe like Tesla's solar roof option that it's supposed to have on a Cybertruck. That could make a big difference too. Like you can just power the truck for a few miles a day just from that. That could be nice. But yeah, there's a lot of potential for savings. That's for sure.
Yeah, and that comes out to around $4,000 a year. So
yeah,
that's like right in your face, big savings.
Yeah, and that can make a difference on most people's budget for sure. Okay, Tesla Autopilot. So we should probably start a countdown or something, but technically Elon has been promising feature complete in the early access program by the end of the year, and that's That's 3 or 4 weeks from now. So,
nah, I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, you have some doubts. Well, there was a new update that started being pushed this week from Autopilot that does bring it a little closer, but literally just a little closer. We're still quite far from that. 2019.40.2. So a few Autopilot-related update on that. First one is kind of interesting one. It's adjusting the speed based on the traffic on the adjacent lane. So if you're familiar with Autopilot, and especially the traffic-aware cruise control feature, it adapts the speed based on the car in front of you in your own lane. Or if there's no car, it will just go to the set limit that you put in, which can be up to 90 miles per hour, I think, something like that. But of course, normally you're not supposed to be that fast. Anyway, it will adjust if there's traffic in front of you in your lane. But if there's traffic on the right lane, for example, and you're on the left lane, it doesn't account for that at all, and it will just whiz past them at the speed that you put, which is okay for most part. But if sometimes, if the for some reason, whatever reason, the traffic is extremely slow in one lane, maybe you're not supposed to go to your max set speed on the left lane. Like passing at full speed is not a great idea because someone might want to try to shift to your lane to beat the traffic. And that could be very dangerous. There's a chance you can crash into them. So Tesla now is accounting for that, and they will calculate the speed of traffic from the adjacent lane and reduce your own speed to a more like a speed that makes more sense. So in theory, it makes a lot of sense because that's what humans naturally do if you're like responsible. Of course, some people aren't, but if you're responsible, that's what you naturally do. However, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of potential to mess that up, a feature like that, because, well, first of all, I don't know, are they going to handle HOV lanes? Because, I mean, you're supposed to be able to go faster in HOV lanes. I mean, I've went pretty fast past like almost either slow moving traffic or like completely jammed traffic on the HOV lane in the past. However, there's like a separation between the HOV lane that's more like let's say a double line lane. So you technically wouldn't have to slow down for that, but sometimes there's not too. So that's something to keep into account. So I'm afraid like of any kind of like phantom braking with that feature. So something to keep an eye on, but we haven't tested it yet. So give it the benefit of the doubt. Another update on that 40.2 that I think is very interesting is automatic lane change improvement. Tesla says in the release note, automatic lane change have been tuned to make lane changes with more confidence. When the adjacent lane is detected to be open, automatic lane changes will initiate faster and be more assertive. So again, another one that in theory makes a ton of sense. If you've used automatic lane change in the past, sometimes it is a little bit hesitant, especially if you're passing someone. If you have an automatic pass of someone, you're passing them from the left lane, coming back into the right lane sometimes is too slow. Like they don't do it fast enough. And I had issues where if I initiate the lane change to go back in the lane, the car will feel like there's not enough space. Like I haven't passed the car that I was passing further enough to initiate it. And then it's not ideal because I'm blocking traffic or whatever. So technically that will fix some of that. But again, another one that we need to try first. Finally, the last one, auto steer stop sign warning. So Tesla is now detecting stop sign, which is a good sign, no pun intended, for the feature complete self-driving coming up, because the feature complete, if you are not familiar with the term yet that Elon has been using a lot, what he means by that is really city driving. It's an autopilot for city driving. So right now autopilot is more for highway driving. Then you have a smart summon for like driverless low speed parking lot driving. And in between, you have city driving, and they want to really like close the gap with that. And that involves dealing with intersections. And intersections, they have stop signs. So you want to be able to detect and react to stop signs. All of this thing does, though, it's not react to them. It's only detects them and warns you if you're about to run the stoplight. And only if you're on auto-steer, too. Only if you have auto-steer activated. So technically, you're not supposed to have auto-steer activated if you are in a road with stops. Because, I mean, I know that a lot of people like to use autopilot in other roads and highways, but personally, I only use it on highway, and you're not supposed to have stops on highways. So I don't know about that, but I'm sure it's going to be useful to some people, unfortunately. Some people who have a habit of running stops. So yeah, it's some like incremental improvement, but from there, do you really see a path to full self-driving feature complete?
Not in the next 4 weeks. No.
Too early access.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything can happen. I mean, clearly some people are running around with that on their cars right now. Maybe they're mostly folks, inside Tesla, but you know, I guess a very limited, group of people, you know, that Tesla deems, good testers could get a feature complete something by the end of the year, but it's certainly not going to be most people.
Yeah, I doubt it too, but it's important to keep in mind that it's going to be really just, it's going to be like early days of autopilot for highway. Like it's going to help you a little bit. It's going to be like a fun feature, but you're going to still be responsible for the car. You're going to still have your hands on the steering wheel, ready to take control. So there's going to be a lot of headline of about Tesla being like a lab rat, Tesla owners being lab rats about it and everything, which to a degree will be fair. But at the same time, like we want to see it. Like I want the feature complete. I want to try it out, but I'll try it out responsibly. Unfortunately, right. I fear the amount of accident that will create, that people will just push it to their limit and everything and have an accident. And of course, like potentially there's more potential for accident probably in city driving than on a highway. Yep. All right. How about a quick word from our sponsor?
Yeah. So this week, the podcast is again sponsored by EV Items. We're super stoked that they keep on sponsoring us. It must be good. As a special deal for our readers, EV Items is offering 20% off all of their accessories with code ELECTREK, ELECTREK. And you'll get a free Elon Musk air freshener with every purchase, which, if you don't have one by now, like seriously, what's wrong with you? Some of the deals you'll want to check out include the wireless Qi charger, inserts, made for the Model 3, the Model S, the Model X. So it's not just the Model 3. There's also a premium interior LED light upgrade kit for all Tesla models that makes it much brighter inside your Tesla at night. These are 6 times brighter than the stock lights and available in 1 or 4 bulb light kits or in complete kits for Model S, Model X, and Model 3. And you'll also find a selection of other accessories like center console storage drawers, floor mats, and much more. Head over to evitems.com and use the code ELECTREK for 20% off. Thanks again to EV Items for sponsoring this week.
Yes, thanks, EV Items. All right. Well, next article was the Gigafactory 3 producing Model 3s, but we already such a discussed that. There's some drone videos that have been out in the last few days where it shows like literally hundreds of cars in the parking lot and more coming out every day. So it looks really like Tesla is like waiting for the approval of sales, which we think could be coming up very, very soon. They expect it by the end of the year. So any week, any day now. And fun article that I posted here this week. I talked to a guy, and I was able to confirm it independently from that guy. Talked to a Model 3 owner in Vegas who's renting out his Model 3 on Thuro. And he has one of those customers reaching out to him for like, okay, I want to reserve the car for that day. And it's just the one thing I would like to be able to try Smart Summon. So does your car has V10 on it? And the guy is like, yeah, I have V10 and I have Smart Summon. The only thing, I cannot let you try it unless it's with me directly, because it requires my phone or my Tesla login credential, because of course Smart Summon use the Tesla app. And the guy didn't want to give him his phone, of course. I mean, I rented a Model 3 earlier this year on Turo, and of course I asked the guy just to check, making sure, like, can you give me your Tesla credential and I can enter it in my Tesla app? And of course the answer is no, and it makes sense. I was just testing him. But
you're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
After you give it back.
Yeah. Oh yeah, if you gave it to me. What are you doing? You're crazy? I could steal your credit card. I mean, literally your credit card is attached to it. Anyway, the guy still went through with the rental, but he said, I'm going to meet you at the parking lot and we can try it together. And then you guys can take the car and do whatever you need to do for the day. So then when the guys, the customers arrive, the Model 3 owner is called Jensen Gatley, by the way. So Jensen was surprised to see them arrive in a Porsche Taycan, because no one has a Porsche Taycan right now, like aside from Porsche.
And definitely not in the U.S.
Yeah, not in the U.S. too. So that was a double surprise. Like, what are you guys doing with that? And at first, he thought they were bloggers, like, because he knew, like, bloggers, they get the test drive or something. So he was like, are you test driving the car? Are you journalists or something? He's like, no,
we haven't gotten the time.
Yeah, we haven't gotten some bloggers maybe. So they like, no, and they finally tell him we work for Porsche, and they tell him we work for Porsche as driver assistance division. So they build the autonomous features like autopilot, but for Porsche. And they wanted to try his Model 3 to try V10 and try the latest autopilot features on V10, including the smart summon feature. So they end up trying smart summon with him. So Jensen was there while they were trying smart summon, because they had to use his phone. And he said that they would go as far as throwing themselves in front of the car to see if the pedestrian warning system will stop the car. He even said that at one point they were like gathering a crowd because they were in a parking lot in front of a casino, and people were coming out of the casino just looking at them like, why a bunch of crazy German dudes are just jumping in front of a car right now?
A car with nobody in it.
A driverless car. Yeah, there was no one in the car. So like, what's going on here? And then after that, they ended up just taking the car and going on their own, because like they rented it to Turo. That's what they do. But when they gave back the car the next day, Jensen sort of probed for their feedback on it. And apparently they were fairly impressed by V10, especially because they said they've tested autopilot before and they were impressed with the improvement of the autopilot, the auto steer feature and the lane keeping and everything with V10. So that's good news, really, because autopilot, anything really software related, Tesla is a big league right now over the rest of the industry. And we love the Taycan. We love the Porsche. We love what the Porsche afford to bring electric cars to market. But if they can really follow Tesla's lead on software, invest more in there and have something closer to autopilot and have maybe better UI and things like that, that's better for everyone. Everyone push Tesla competitively.
Yeah, and also I don't know if they're taking a lot of Tesla customers. I mean, a few perhaps, but like I feel like they're getting a lot of Porsche customers to buy the Taycan, and Taycan's not really like a sedan like the Model S. It does, there is some overlap there, but it's it's a four-door car, but it's not it's not as much room inside. I mean, the P100D, some people get that even though they don't have a family or want to take their family in it. So for me, it's not like the Taycan isn't really competition for Tesla and the Model S. It's more like it's just like the two best electric vehicles out there right now in terms of speed and specs, which is interesting.
Let Elon think that, though. Let Elon think that it's competition, because it looks like it lit a fire behind the Model S program, which was somewhat like forgotten for a while, and now with the plaid mold coming and everything. So
yeah, I mean, we knew plaid was coming with the Roadster, which, by the way, like will probably wipe the Taycan off the map. But I'm sure Porsche's got
performance-wise,
and off the line, not necessarily cornering. Porsche might be better there, but you know, Porsche will obviously come out with something else electric. We've already heard that their Macan may have a four-motor thing coming along, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Tesla comes up with three motors. Now, oh, we have it's the MT. Let's go with
four motors. It's the razor blade or the back of the iPhone camera thing. Well,
there's a point of diminishing return, right, though, auto industry. Like, at one point, like, you can add motors, but, like, the size of the motors will...
Right.
There's a limit.
I feel like four is kind of the limit on a four-wheeled car. Like, if you put two motors per wheel, that would be kind of silly, you'd think.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's interesting. We've already seen Rivian and... who else has got a four-motor car coming? Or a rumored? Porsche, Rivian... Oh, Rimac has that Concept 1.
Yeah.
Concept 2 is four-wheel. So that's pretty exciting. Like, I think four motor cars are, you know, they can do those perfect donuts and stuff.
The Tesla Semi.
Yes. Well, yeah. That one. That one's not going to do donuts, I don't think. At least not perfect ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, four motors, all the better. Cool.
Yeah. A few other things that Jensen mentioned I thought was noteworthy, but of course I couldn't confirm otherwise. He said he tried he couldn't drive the Taycan, but they let him in and they let him like do a test ride. And he said that the car has a night vision system in it, where one of the cameras is a night vision camera and you can get the feed into the car. He saw the feed of the night vision camera from the front face camera. I don't know exactly what that does for you, because I mean, a front facing camera, you're not supposed to look, even if it is night vision, if you're not really supposed to look at the screen. You're supposed to look forward. So I'm not sure how useful it is, but it's in there. And, oh, yeah, he did poll the I think it was five German engineers that came. And they basically all said that they all seem to don't get electric cars, the concept of it. Like, they didn't like the concept of an electric car, where they're like, I mean, you need to charge it. There's not enough chargers. Like, they were complaining about that. They said, especially in Germany itself, like, I mean, it's hard to complain between Las Vegas and California and the whole of California, really, in terms of chargers. But they were complaining about Germany and everything. But although they all agree that in terms of driving cars, and the old guys from Porsche for a while now, they all prefer the Taycan to everything else. So, in other words, the Taycan is now their favorite.
And I think that's we've heard anecdotally from a lot of riders that did go on the Porsche event that aren't necessarily EV people; they're just Porsche people, and they've all said that the Taycan is the best Porsche that Porsche has ever made. Even one of my favorite car YouTubers, Doug DeMuro, you know, he just reviewed the Taycan, and I think he said that it's the best Porsche. I think he likes the classic Porsches, but he's like
the best Porsche.
Yeah,
right,
the
now,
best modern Porsche or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's cool. Like, that kind of shows where EVs are going. That's a great kind of endorsement for electric vehicle technology. Now, like, how long it's going to take for Porsche to go through its lineup and electrify everything? We actually at the LA Auto Show 2 weeks ago talked to the. We're at a small conference with the CEO of Porsche USA, who said that, you know, clearly all of the lineup is going to go electric. And he said that the last one to go electric would probably be the 911. And that's, you know, that's kind of an interesting statement, because, you know, people like going like this and hearing woo. So I guess that'll.
But people will prefer, if you do it right, like a 911 type, like a little sports car, a two-seater, that could be insane too, like if you do it right. But to be fair to Porsche, like, even though Porsche had some like weird comments about electric vehicles at some point, especially when it comes to the 911, which everybody seems like reticent to electrify, the actual internal goal is 50% electric cars by 2025, which... by electric standard, it's not great, because we think that no one's going to want to buy in the right mind a gasoline car after 2025. But in terms of automakers, it's actually one of the most aggressive goals out there, because most of them, it's like 25% by 2025. And some of them, it's like 20 to 30. The highest one would be maybe 40%. But those also, those include what they call electrified vehicle, which can include anything from an hybrid to an all-electric car. So not as aggressive as an all-electric car sells 50% of the entire fleet. So that's an aggressive goal for an automaker.
Yep.
But at the same time, they think that the Taycan is going to become one of their biggest vehicle program right now. Like, not as big as the Macan, maybe, not as big as the Cayenne, but like probably their bigger sedan. They're certainly the bigger sedan program, bigger than the Panamera, based on their projected production capacity. So just that alone, that will help them. They plan on growing their market, basically, and growing it with electric vehicles. So that will contribute to the 50% goal. All right. Other big news this week. GM announced a partnership with LG for a new joint venture, 50-50 joint venture on a 30 gigawatt hour factory, battery factory in Ohio. Actually, in Lordstown, near the factory that they just sold to Workhorse anymore. But anyway, the company that's affiliated with Workhorse, which is now known as Lordstown Motors. They are investing up to $2.2 billion for that 30 gigawatt hour of capacity, which they plan to be able to expand. And they are talking about an industry-leading cost per kilowatt hour, which you were on the call set with the CEO about this, and they said that they are aiming for under $100 per kilowatt
hour. Yeah, just to clarify that a little bit, so this was from the LG guy, I can't remember his name, but Mary Barra didn't say anything about batteries or anything.
Oh, okay.
So the LG guy said that they are aiming to go below $100 per kilowatt hour, and that was in the near future. And he wouldn't go into like how near, but he said, you know, like obviously the cost of building the factory and you know is going to play into that, but they don't think that there's going to be any problem reaching that, you know, that, and it's kind of a you know, a round number point, but it's also a point where a lot of people think that, you know, you build the exact same internal combustion car and battery car, and if you can get the batteries down to $100 per kilowatt hour, which, you know, if you're building a 50 kilowatt hour car, that's $5,000, that's the point at which you get the same car. And obviously there's a lot of, you know, pluses and minuses, and total ROI, I believe we've already crossed that point. But anyway, he believes that they can get to that point within, you know, a few years of the plant being open. What's also impressive, like 30 gigawatt hours, that's quite a few cars, and they plan on having that in, like, you know, a couple years.
Yeah, speaking of that, a couple of years, because you said it plans to be online by the end of 2020, because in the press release, they start about construction to start in mid-2020. So I don't know, like, I think there might be some confusion about when it actually comes.
Yeah, online. I think it's going to take at least a year to build, and yeah, probably come online in 2021. So,
okay,
you know, these things take a while, I'm sure, like somewhere in between Tesla's Gigafactory 1 and Tesla's Gigafactory 3, a year to, I don't know, I guess Gigafactory 1 is still being built in some way. So, but the point is that when they get to capacity, GM and LG are expect to have a 30 gigawatt hour capacity, which is, you know, at 100 kilowatt hours per car, which is more than most cars will be, comes out to 300,000 cars per year. So that's at least 300,000 cars capability from that one plant. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And so that plant is also only going to supply GM, right?
For the time being. So they didn't, you know, it's a joint venture. LG and GM are creating a third company that they are 50-50 on. And the LG guy was like, we have no plans now to sell to anybody else, but you know, who knows what the world's going to be like in a few years. So it's always in the cards.
So before the news come out, there was a rumor that it would be for the new Cadillac. That's going to be the first electric car that's going to come out on GM's new BEV3 platform. So the next gen electric platform after the Bolt EV generation. But in the actual press release that GM sent out, they talk about the batteries going into an all-electric truck coming in the fall of 2021. And so that's a timeline that the company announced last month when Tesla unveiled the pickup truck too. And there was in reference to an all-electric pickup truck because Ford is also making one for 2021. Tesla is making one for 2021. So everyone is trying to come out with their all-electric truck in 2021. And so for sure, the plan's going to be online by then.
And yeah, and you've been like, talking about this for years. Like, why doesn't Tesla just announce their their electric pickup truck, because everybody else will announce theirs? And my God, like the day of.
Oh yeah. That was for sure. What I didn't plan though is Rivian's impact though, because I would say that Tesla, I think, is still had an impact because of course, like we said, the same day everybody announced the same thing basically. But I would give also credit to Rivian for a year before that unveiling the OnTruck, and the really like picked up the pace for the whole electric pickup truck market, because of course Ford invested in them, so Ford's going to use their technology too. So it's a whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, with these car companies, these American car companies are live and breathe by their trucks and SUVs, and you know, making a sports car, like maybe it affects the Corvette market a little bit, maybe it affects the Mustang market a little bit, but we really don't care. When you start making electric pickup trucks, all of a sudden they start to care. So
yeah, for sure. So, it's a big profit center for them. All right, moving on to Jaguar. Had an interesting update this week that we saw from one of our readers, Mr. Malcolm Bird from the UK. Sent me an email that Jaguar sent it to him, announcing that he's going to get a new update on his I-Pace that's going to increase the range by up to 8%. So, no, I'm talking about Jaguar here, not Tesla. Software update increasing the range of the car. Isn't that great?
Awesome. I bet he wasn't expecting that morning, to have an extra 20 some miles or 20 miles of range. That's a pretty good surprise.
And interestingly, Jaguar says that, and I don't know if you remember, but I know you don't follow Formula E that much, unless you come to the races, which you do sometimes. Always fun. But last time you were there, like, was this summer, right? Did you see the Jaguar I-Pace race before that? Was there one?
Yeah.
Oh, you saw that. Okay, well, they actually say that the upgrades are coming from what they learned from that race series. So my understanding is that they have the same powertrain in those I-Pace that they do in the regular customer I-Pace, but they push those harder than the regular cars, of course. And from what they learned from that, they implemented software improvement that increase the range. They're talking about greater efficiency in eco mode, which makes no sense to me, because are they using eco mode in those races? Like, what the hell? All right, that's what they said, so we have to go by them. Refinements to the thermal management system, that makes sense, because you have to use the thermal management system at full capacity basically when you're racing, and that could translate to improvement to the general efficiency of the thermal management system, which could then help a regular car. What I suspect is the biggest improvement here is that, according here, the battery will also run to a lower state of charge than previously without affecting drivability, durability, or performance, which translates to basically, they figured out that the big battery buffer they have at the end of the battery pack is not that useful for the longevity of the battery pack, meaning that they were being extremely conservative with it, like Audi was until recently too, and like Mercedes-Benz is with the EQC too. And unlike Tesla did years ago, they figured out that, all right, we can give them a little bit more energy capacity and it won't affect longevity that much. So let's just do it, and let's just like actually use the energy capacity that we have in those giant battery pack and not just sit on them for the sake of a potential percent or two better value at the end of the life cycle.
I wonder if that, like, that charge that's in the batteries, like, if they let it go, if you run out of battery, like, if there's just no battery left in the car and you're, you know, a mile away from a charger, yeah, will they let you have access to that?
I mean, if they knew that you were just a mile away from the charger, maybe they would. But I think that the logic behind it is that we prefer that you get stuck with less mileage than to go to zero, because we think that will affect the longevity of the battery pack. That's the whole logic behind it. So technically it would be no. However, if it was just switching a button somewhere and you can actually, a bit like those e-bikes where they sell it to you with the 25 miles per hour speed limit, but you can just snip a wire, a cable, and it goes to 35. Yeah. So a bit like that, that would be nice, but it's not the case. There's a few other updates too for older I-Pace owner, well, for owners of older I-Pace vehicle, I should say. That update was already released in newer cars, but now they will get it for the user interface updated user interface for the older car. So that's nice, because my two biggest gripes with the I-Pace was software wasn't great, like the user interface wasn't great. And the efficiency wasn't there yet. So 8% range increase on the same battery pack, that will bump the efficiency a lot. I'm curious to see the next EPA rating on it. Technically, the EPA rating is 234 miles right now on that on battery pack. If it's really just an 8% increase, that would be 252, which is pretty damn good. But it's not necessarily going to translate to an 8% EPA range increase. It really depends what they mean by that up to 8% range improvement. The last thing is that this update, they need to go to the dealership to get it, apparently. So that's not as good as Tesla, but it's still just a software update. However, they do say that the update will improve the capacity for over-the-air update. So meaning that the next time, maybe you won't have to go to the dealership and they will push that update over the
air. Yeah, that's a little bit like Chevy with their the Bolt update. I actually had to do it with the it's an old electric article from like 2017, but I actually downloaded the update onto a USB stick and did it myself, which like it wasn't that hard to do, and I feel like most people could do it, but it was kind of wonky that you have to do that in this day and age. It felt very like Emmett.
You felt going back in 2005.
Yeah, like MS DOS, like disk or what? I don't know. It's silly. So theoretically, Jaguar's now in a good place. And like I feel like the I-Pace is a really compelling vehicle for like going off road a little bit.
Just the look of it too. It's
I wonder why it hasn't been embraced as much as like some of the other ones. Like, I mean, you know, the Taycan obviously is a pretty impressive car, but like the I-Pace isn't that much less compelling, I guess.
But not many people have it too. I feel like when more people get their hands on it, like it gets like some traction. Some market in Europe, there's decent numbers, but I think they had their record sales last month. Yeah, they did. They had their record sales last month in the US. What do you think the number was?
400?
Record 400? Sales.
No,
not even 300. I think it was like 290 or 270.
Right. So
that was record sales. it's really not comparable to some other cars, and hopefully not to the Taycan. But the Taycan, they're also having some production delays, like we discussed earlier. So apparently, the first delivery are not expected until early next year. So we'll have to wait for that. And Porsche is still not letting us getting our hands on one. Because they don't like us very much. I mean, we're a big fan of them.
I don't know if they don't like us. They just don't trust us.
Well, maybe they don't trust us.
Because everybody they've given it to has given false, like in Porsche's favor, numbers. Like those German magazines are all, you know, they're pulling really bad numbers from weird places. So maybe they just...
And we did report on that. So they're not so liking that a lot. I think we are.
Sorry, kind of keep it real.
We're spies. Or Tesla or something.
Brand ambassadors.
Brand ambassador is the word you use, yeah. All right, fair enough. we'll get our hands on one, whether they want it or not. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. You can give us a thumbs up and a subscribe. If you're listening to our podcast app, you please make sure to leave us a review if you can. That would be nice. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. And also, check out EV Items, our nice sponsor, and check out their accessories. They're great.